Okay, welcome you guys to our April Performance Project call. I am so looking forward to connecting with you guys. It feels like it's been a long time. It's been a long month since we had our last call. I'm going to start out answering some questions that came up on the Facebook page. I got two really good questions that I want to talk about because they're things that are, you know, that I've really been grappling with the last couple of weeks and that I know you guys have been as well. And then I want to also, between that and the coaching, I would love to just hear some sort of wins from you guys. I just would love to have you raise your hand if you've got a gratitude or a win you want to share before we start the coaching, because I think that's, you know, and I really want to be clear about this whole concept of wins. This is not about a Pollyanna positive, putting a positive spin on everything. That is not what this program is about. That is not what wins are about. They are not necessarily taking a bad thing and having to turn it into a good thing all the time. The wins really are just about being in gratitude and being willing to notice what's working and what's going well in your life. And the questions I'm going to answer are going to talk a little bit more about that, but I'm going to actually open up the So if you have a quick win or gratitude that you want to share, go ahead and raise your hand, and we're going to do a few of those before we jump into the coaching. Okay, but for now, I'm going to start with a couple of questions, and one of them just came in, and I just love it. It's from Keely. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but it's something that she kind of articulated, something that I've been thinking about myself and that I know a lot of the people I've been working with this last month have been thinking about. So she mentioned, okay, so background, I made a Facebook post this week that said, on the first half of my run, this is me talking, not Keely. On the first half of my run, I listened to the news, and on the second half of my run, I was hunting beauty. And I after I listened to the news and I was thoroughly afraid and depressed and scared, I started looking for all the flowers I could find to take pictures of while I was running. And it was really a cool sort of juxtaposition for me. So I shared that on Facebook. And what she says is, that she saw my post, and it sort of demonstrated this idea of being able to hold two emotions at once. And these are my words again, not hers. But what she said is, I think you hit on guilt in one of your messages. I feel incredibly guilty for so many reasons that make me feel like I need to shut off my emotions. She says, I'm blessed to be working on crisis needs for hospitals. My horse is progressing from some feed and back soreness, and my goals were more journey related than dressage show milestones. So my goals are still in place. My family and I are healthy and well, and our finances are stable today, but I feel so emotional that I'm working tons and seeing others, you know, feel sort of inflexible and selfish, and then I get angry. So she's kind of talking about this idea. She said, I feel immense guilt for so many of my feelings. So she's feeling guilty for how she feels. And I cannot tell you how I experienced this and how many people in the last, you know, month or so have talked about this. And we are all having very different experiences with this whole coronavirus pandemic situation. There are people who actually have lost a loved one. There are people who are sick with the virus. There are people who have lost a job and are experiencing major economic hardship. There are people who are not able to see their horse and are not able to ride right now. There are people who are working more than they ever have and are more stressed out than they have ever been because they're in essential positions. There are people that have their kids at home and are stressed out and exhausted from trying to be suddenly teachers and also manage finances so we have this whole spectrum of different concerns, different experiences, different changes that have happened. You know, we have trainers that are all of a sudden at home responsible for exercising, you know, 20 horses a day and have very little help. I mean, there's just this huge spectrum of experiences, not all bad. And what I have heard from people is this guilt feeling of guilt is basically a judgment of your feelings. So guilt says you should feel one way and not another. And what I want you guys to encourage, I want to encourage you to think about is that we have the capacity to hold this whole spectrum of emotions. We can feel angry and scared and sad and depressed. We can feel despair. I have a client who wrote me a message yesterday, and she said she lost her dad from COVID 3 weeks ago and, you know, described her experience to me. And I mean, I was just in tears. I cannot tell you like what that despair that I feel when I think about people who've lived these amazing lives dying alone without being able to see their families. Like, to me, the despair is almost so big I can't describe it. I don't have to live there. And what I want to say to you guys, and this is what I've learned, is that an hour later, I was able to meet my kid and my husband in front of the house and roast marshmallows and, you know, have play with the dogs. And I was able to feel joy again and feel a degree of safety and security because of the situation that I was in that moment. And it is so easy to let guilt steal that ability that we have as human beings to feel this whole spectrum of emotions. And I want to give you guys all permission, not that I matter that much, but I would love the universe or, you know, whatever faith you have, whoever your God is, gives you permission to feel it all. And it is all good. It is all okay. It is okay to carry the weight of the world on your shoulders and to be scared and sad. And it is also okay to feel joy and security and hope and happiness. And that this, you know, however you navigate your way through this, let go of the guilt, the judgment for how you feel, and allow yourself to feel. And that kind of leads into this other question of, you know, this Pollyanna positive thing. It's not constructive to constantly be judging yourself for being in a negative or a kind of a low down emotional state. If you're feeling worried and anxious and afraid or just depressed and discouraged, whatever, if you're constantly judging yourself for that and feel like you should be feeling some other way, it's going to keep you down there. You're going to stay stuck down there. So what I would encourage you to do, and I'm going to talk about this on Friday in the resilience workshop too, I love what someone in the Cadence Coaching Facebook group said, that she lets herself crawl and ball. And that it's so important to let yourself crawl and ball, to be angry, sad, pissed off, frustrated, whatever. And then make your pivot. Feel what you feel first. I mean, that was the whole point of our Grit and Gratitude Month last month, of that module, was to learn how to feel what you feel and process those emotions. And then pivot from there and make a choice. You need that crawl and ball period in order to be able to get yourself to a place where you can then be in choice around how you're going to think about, then feel, and then act in any given scenario. Okay, so really think about how you're operating around your emotions and guilt. I mean, there could be no better practice than the situation we're in right now for applying these skills. So the second question I want to address is another great one, and I think, well, I'm going to try to find it here and read it. Both Barbie and Kelly, you guys had kind of a similar question. Barbie said, I think one reason you're not getting a lot of input here, meaning on this post asking for coaching questions, is because so many of us are dealing with life rather than riding, which I think is very true. Many of us can't even ride, so it's tough to get excited about riding goals. I'm able to ride, but I feel like I'm just treading water, not improving. Any goals I set months ago seem ridiculously unimportant now. But when this is over, I do want to have progressed and not be in the same place as I was in March. So can you address this? And I think this is so important. And then Kelly said, I agree with Barbie that when this is over, I want to be able to say I progressed. But how do I do that when all I can do is lunge my horse? Really great questions. And this kind of speaks to this idea of pivoting, but I want to talk about it a little more in terms of macro and micro. If, you know, at the beginning of this, if you had goals for the competition season or, you know, big things you wanted to accomplish over the next 3 to 6 months with your horse, those are kind of macro goals. Those are big, big things. And when you can progress along normally, you kind of are aware of that big goal, but then you're aware of all the little benchmarks and the strategies in between, and you go about your business doing those. But when that's sort of taken away, the ability to accomplish that macro goal or to work toward it right now is taken away, if you stay oriented toward that macro goal, your brain will automatically be comparing whatever progress you're making right now to that macro goal. And it could end up feeling, like Kelly mentioned, quite small, and like you're treading water or you're not getting anywhere, like Barbie said. So what I would encourage you guys to do, if you're feeling that way, and I'll use my own experience as an example, is this is the time now to get more micro about your goals. You know, I had a goal, I know I've shared this before, but I had a goal of riding in the USCF four-year-old classes this year. And so I had oriented myself towards the competition schedule and riding that test and, you know, kind of the macro goal of what I want my horse to feel like and look like and how I want the test to ride and all of that. Well, that's gone now because even if we have a second half of the competition season, it's not going to be a legitimate goal. So I sort of experimented the first week or so of this whole thing and I was trying to figure out, okay, what do I want to accomplish? What do I want to be able to say if I'm not going to be working on that four-year-old test now? And I did some work in hand. I did some lunging. I did some Cavaletti. And I was like, okay, where are my holes? Where are the holes? And for any of you who know me and my horse, you know I have a hole in terms of ground manners and leaving home and anxiety. He has a lot of anxiety about other horses and leaving home. And when that happens, he's very, very unruly on the ground and probably dangerous. So what I decided to do was make a goal around in-hand work and around lunging and long lining and doing all these things. And I have had so much fun, you guys, because not only did I realize, okay, that's a big hole that I can use this time to really fix. But as I've started doing it, I'm finding a lot of other holes that I get to fill. And I'm realizing now I'm going to end up with a safer, more well-educated horse at the end of this 3 months. I am going to be safer. I am going to be better educated. And I have found some online resources in terms of videos and mentors and people that I admire that I've, you know, reading what they write and watching what they put out online, and I'm utilizing all of those resources to be my own best trainer. And I have found that I've just gotten a lot of traction around this micro goal of filling in these particular holes in my groundwork and in my lunging. So I would encourage you to think about, you know, and some of you have already done this brilliantly, but what does it look like to make some more micro goals with your horse so that instead of taking little tiny steps and comparing them to this big, huge goal, you have a smaller goal, and so your little tiny steps are going to feel a lot bigger. Okay, so that's my answer to that question, and I would love to hear some of you guys' answers as well. Maybe we'll, on the thread of the recording of this, if I could have some of you guys respond to that as well, for those of you that have sort of successfully already made a micro goal and had a similar experience. What has that been like for you? Okay, so I don't have any hands. Oh, no, I do have hands raised. Okay, so I would love to hear a win or a gratitude. Who is this?
This is Kelly.
To right now. Hi, Kelly. What is your win or gratitude?
Well, it goes with what you were just talking about, the micro goals. I had said about Barbie's response that, you know, all I'm doing is lunging, and how do I stay, you know, that I can progress? And just as you were talking, you inspired me for my micro goal, and that is to build a better relationship on the ground with Thunder so that I can take that relationship into the saddle. If I'm more assertive on the ground, if I have more leadership, I know when I did my one-on-one coaching with you, I would always say, Thunder, take care of me. And I shifted while I was doing my coaching with you to Thunder, listen to me. And I think along the way, and in being injured from a non-riding injury, I got away from that. And so this more of Thunder, listen to me, I can micro goal that to our lunging work and our groundwork, and I can be more assertive on the ground. I can be the leader. I can be stronger in having him listening to me and more prompt in transitions on the lunge line. And it will all lead to this, this assertive person who is around him all the time, even when I get to be in the saddle, whenever that may be. And I
I hope everybody can hear. I hope everybody can hear, Kelly, the difference between what you just said and what you wrote on the Facebook comment, which was, how can I make progress when all I can do is lunge?
Yeah.
Night and day, right? Night and day. Awesome. Thank you so much for that.
It was just from listening to you talk about micro and macro goals, and it just lit up my brain like a light bulb. And now I feel like
beautiful.
I have a purpose and a direction.
Will you keep us posted on that?
I will.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Let's see. 910. Is this Micah?
It is.
Who's this? Hi. I thought I recognized your phone number.
I know.
I only have I recognize your phone number because still on my phone, it doesn't, I can't get your name to come up. Your number always comes up. So.
Oh, that's weird.
It's not like I haven't memorized or anything. I just always see it. So what's your win or your gratitude?
Well, I guess, you know, I hadn't even thought of guilt as being a part of my life at all until you just brought it up. And I just wanted to put in my two cents that as a trainer, it's really hard to be the one who is telling people they can't be in their happy place. And I've struggled a little bit in the last 2 weeks with trying to find a balance between how I'm comfortable in the barns and wanting to help the people that I love also be comfortable in the barns. You know, like I have several physicians that really need this as their time to let down and to be balanced and happy. And there's me on the other side going, hey, I really need some space. You guys are here way too much. And so it's just been a little bit of a struggle. And I felt like last week I finally kind of got pushed enough to the edge where I was very clear. And I sent out an email and said, this is what I need. And for me, the big pivot was instead of thinking about my people's happiness is I needed to think of making sure that I'm able to keep the barn safe for them. Ultimately, they still only get 2 days a week here, which is how we kind of have it arranged. But I need to make sure that I'm healthy and that Margarito's healthy and all the people that clean the stalls and care for the horses, because if one of us gets sick, they're screwed. You know, they're really. And that was a big pivot for me to be able to say, I'm right. I'm going to stand by my guns and I'm sorry it doesn't make you happy, but at least I know in my heart I'm making your horse healthy because I can care for them and stay, you know, in the right place. So that was hard.
Yeah, and I think I love that you brought that up now because part of this next module is, you know, talking about perfectionism and people pleasing and procrastination. And what you're talking about is kind of shifting from people pleasing and really orienting what you're doing toward how other people feel, and instead really looking at the integrity of it for you. And also, people don't always know and understand in the moment what you're doing for them, you know, that's right.
Right.
But it is
right.
Better for them. They are safer. Their horses are safer. everything, you know,
right.
it is better. And even despite how they feel in the moment, you've got to align yourself with what's right and bigger.
Right. Yeah. And that was a big step for me. And sometimes I mean, I think as women, we all people please by our nature. We always kind of try and soothe and make things right rather than being like, no, I'm a leader. I'm not just a woman who wants to make things right, but I'm a leader and I need to lead in the right direction.
Yeah. Yeah. And do it in the face of people being upset and uncomfortable and still being able
hard.
To hold your line.
Yeah.
Awesome. That's a huge win.
Huge win.
Yeah. So then you can keep carrying that over as you move out of the whole pandemic period, keep carrying that over.
You know what's funny though? So speaking of carrying over, I'm still teaching the working students, but I'm finding I'm rusty, which is like embarrassing to say. Like I'm rusty at teaching because I'm not doing it three times a day, every single day for days on end, you know, it's really, it's kind of funny. I've been laughing at myself for that going, wow, where's my feet?
Well, and I'm glad you brought that up too, because I think that's something that's important for us to be compassionate about too, because I'm actually rusty riding because I'm doing so much in-hand work and having so much fun on the ground. I'm riding a lot less than I was or than I normally do. And I'm going to get rusty kind of going off the property with the young horse. And, like, there are certain things I'm going to have to build up. And that's okay. Like, it's okay to get a little rusty.
Right.
Because there's so much else that you can accomplish during this time.
So I only have one more comment, which is that one of the things that I find very inspiring to kind of keeping me motivated for in hand and also on the groundwork is watching a lot of the Mustang trainers on YouTube. There's a ton of these trainers that post their videos on how they weekly or daily get through their little handicaps with these wild things. And
you, Micah, on Thursday, our daily post is going to be like sharing resources like that. Would you post some of those that you found particularly interesting
to.
As a part of that, as a comment
yeah.
for that? Because I'm going to start a thread of like all of our video, you know, resources and stuff like that.
Oh, good idea. Okay. I will do that.
Okay. Awesome. All right.
Thank you,
Jen.
Okay. Bye.
All right. Bye-bye. One more. Who's this?
Hello?
That's Hello.
Me. Hello.
Who is this?
This is Lorraine.
Hi, Lorraine. What's your win or gratitude?
I guess, you know, I really struggled a couple weeks ago when it, you know, a lot of what I was seeing was people being stuck at home and, you know, how difficult that was. And I was the opposite of that. And I was really frustrated because I'm considered essential. I don't actually think I'm essential, so I disagree with that diagnosis, but so I'm stuck going to work, and my employer was doing literally nothing to protect our staff at all. And so, but last week was a big shift for me because, first of all, I let it be okay for me to be jealous, but frankly, I would love to stay at home right now.
Yeah.
You know, get my groceries delivered. I'm introverted by nature, so it totally wouldn't faze me. But it's okay to be jealous and then move through that. There's good and bad to every side of that. I also then felt guilty for feeling jealous because most people, it's not a fun vacation. It's, you know, suddenly homeschooling or just having your kids there while you try to work from home and so on. So I allowed all of that to kind of be, and then it just went away, really. Not in a negative way, like not to not feeling, but to the point where, you know, I started reaching out to people at work and seeing if they felt the way I did about our employer's inappropriate response, and they did. We made a move. We got things changing. Stuff is happening. Now I'm facing, frankly, what I consider a god-awful work schedule that I would never, ever choose of my own volition. But I'm actually feeling fine with it. I've planned how to deal with it, and, you know, it's going to super suck. But it's the right thing to do for everybody. It's fine. And I feel much better about actually doing something than not doing something. I'm still writing, and it's okay for me to feel. I'm still struggling a little bit with it's okay for me to be happy that I'm still writing. I've been lessening. I've been moving towards my goals. I've not micromanaged, that's not the word, pivoted, I guess, to the smaller goals like you were talking about. So, you know, I wanted to show at first level this year. Okay, well, now my plan is instead of showing at first one and two, I'm going to show first three, and I'm practicing second level at home. Like, it's
great.
So I just kind of shuffled it around a bit. My jumping stuff is really not as, I mean, it's eventually a competition focused, but a lot of it's the confidence, and that's really coming a long way. So it's mostly just that I'm okay with all the crazy going on right now, and I feel much more like we talked about last time about being in control of where I am on the scale. There are still totally days when I'm a complete mess about, you know, my best friend's mom is dying in hospital and she's not allowed to visit, you know, like, it's not like I'm ignoring it. It's not the Pollyanna view. So it's not that. But it really is. I've taken all the things that we've talked about before the pandemic and then also during, and actually applied those, and oh my God, it works.
Yay, good. And it really isn't necessarily about being in control of, you know, where you are on the chart, but really allowing yourself to just be where you are, and that'll move you up. You know, it's that acceptance that I can hear. You keep coming to acceptance, right? And that's what kind of allows you to shift up.
Totally.
Awesome. Thank you. And I am going to address your question, too, that you posted before we end.
Oh, that's fine. If there's others ahead, no problem.
All right. Thanks, Lorraine.
Thank you.
Okay. So let's start with Whitney, if you're here. Are you here, Whitney? Go ahead and raise your hand by pressing star 6 if you are here. Whitney, are you there? It'll take my internet a couple seconds. So, and then let's have Megan and Anita and Ruth. All you guys can all go ahead and raise your hands as well. Let's see. Who's this?
Hello, can you hear me?
I can. Is this Whitney?
It is.
Hi.
Sorry, I'm getting a spam call at the same time, so I should probably go because I have to give, you know, someone my credit card. Otherwise, I'm gonna go to jail. I can't go to jail right now.
That's right. The IRS will come knock on your door.
Right.
So, could you kind of just very concisely outline your coaching question? I thought it was really.
Yeah. Cool. So, I mean, I don't think I'm saying anything radical here in that my life is, you know, completely turned upside down in the last 3 weeks. I am part-time furloughed down to 24 hours a week working from home, which at first was this fantastic, like, oh my gosh, I'm never home. I want to be home. I'm so glad to be here. I have all these projects to get done. And it has just turned into this wave of inaction. It's this weird, I find that now that my barn time is limited, I was using the barn as an excuse to not finish some things around the house. So now that I'm just kind of stuck here, it's hard to look at these things and not feel like maybe they're not terribly important, you know, kind of given the current climate, or I'm kind of battling with a lot of physical and just emotional exhaustion. And so, you know, I'll set up these big lofty goals, like, okay, this weekend I'm going to paint the entire guest bedroom, which isn't realistic and it doesn't happen. And then I don't do it at all. And that's not very typical of me. I know this is just kind of a common, or this is just a direct correlation between, you know, kind of what's going on right now, but it's just, you know, I've got a lot of stress and anxiety. I'm worried I'm going to get fully laid off. And so it's, nothing really seems that important right now. And I don't mean that in like this fatalist, you know, I'm laying on the floor crying type sense, but it just feels really hard to redirect my life when literally everything is different.
So one of the things you said, I wrote down, you said recalibrating your goals, because it sounds like, I mean, and I think you're not alone, because we're all sort of adjusting to a new lifestyle, whatever that is, and the inertia of that adjustment sometimes can leave you feeling, you know, like your feelings sort of take over and your feelings start to guide your behaviors, rather than in the old days, your schedule guided your behaviors, right? Your schedule helped you decide what you were going to do at any given moment and what you were going to get done.
And right. So, and I think too, I think that's a huge part. Before this transition to work from home, I took the train in as a commuter. And so my life was literally scheduled to the minute. I knew when I had to leave my house, when I had to leave my desk, what time I had to be at A so that I could get to B. And now it's like, I have this amazing luxury of time and I'm like losing my mind. I don't know. Nobody's telling me where to go and where to be. So
what would you like it to be like? Describe for me what, that's the island of what is. What is the island of what is going to be? What do you want it to be like?
I would love to be able to take a bite out of a project. So for me, the project right now is this guest bedroom. And for those of you who haven't heard ad nauseum for like my entire existence, my husband and I are restoring an old house, and it's just become my personality at this point. But I would just like to be totally happy with taking an hour or 2 hours and working on something and being okay with it in that moment, instead of feeling like I have to give 16 hours to this and be exhausted, or I haven't done my job.
So this becomes more like a practice rather than a goal. So if you, what would you love to be able to say at say the end of 3 months or now like 2.5 months? What would you love to be able to say?
I would love to be able to say I finished this guest bedroom. Now the quarantine's lifted, I can have people over, but it didn't become a toxic point of obsession. You know, I wasn't channeling my feelings or ignoring my feelings, or, you know, ignoring kind of the stress and the emotions of the quarantine by kind of numbing myself with overwork on restoring.
So what would be a healthy amount of, what would be a healthy amount of work on it? Like at a day, if you were going to have a daily practice, that was kind of like it was a practice that allowed you, like I have a coach that I work with that talks about worrying while you work. Like you get to worry, but you only get to worry while you're working, while you're organizing, while you're cleaning, while you're doing something. Mm-hmm. It's your time. Like what if you had a practice around working on the guest bedroom for just a small period of time every day that became like a meditation practice or a yoga practice or, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't always about what you achieve, but instead about what you practice.
Yeah, I like that. You know, I think finding that like 1 to 2 hours a day is very, very manageable. And I like that, changing this to a practice instead of what I achieve, because the hard, you know, I mean, it's time consuming, laborious, mind numbing work. And sometimes you work and work and work and you look and you're like, I've accomplished, like, I can't look at this and say, look at this amazing thing I did. Scrape the windows with a dental curette for 3 hours.
And that's kind of an inner critic thing to do, to look back at what just happened and say, oh, but you could have done better. That's not good enough. You didn't hardly get anything done. And that puts you in an emotional state that is discouraged and sort of low down, right? And then it takes you, it makes you not want to do it at all. So then procrastination kicks in. So if you instead of measuring what you're getting done, you just decided, okay, I'm going to do this for 2 hours a day, and you set yourself a timer, and instead of looking at like, oh, I have to get this wall done or this trim done or whatever, it's more, okay, I work on the guest room from 10 to 12 every day.
Okay.
Would something like that work to help you recalibrate a little bit towards that goal?
I think so, because it's, I want, all I've ever wanted for the last 3 years was time in the house, like to be able to work on this unfettered. And now I have it, and I'm just like doing every, and like, I can't go anywhere. I can't, you know, I can't distract myself with other things. And it's just become.
And the tendency then is to begin to judge yourself for that. And that story you tell yourself is, I'm squandering this valuable resource that I've always wanted. I suck because I'm not using this time. Those thoughts will keep you doing it. They will keep you procrastinating.
Are you here? Are you like sitting with me? Because that's, I mean, that's what it's, I mean, that's what it's, I'm hyper
in your brain.
Okay, if you're going to be here, you have to paint, but fine. But
the only reason it feels that way is because I have that same conversation in my brain, and I bet there's not anybody on the call who doesn't recognize this on some level.
Okay.
You know, I mean, we have different experiences and different personalities, but this core conversation, the core inner critic conversation, is the same.
Okay.
So it's the what I call Groundhog Day. It doesn't matter what you did yesterday. And this one to two hour practice, only expect yourself to do it 80% of the time. There's 20% attrition. Whenever you decide to really commit to something 100%, expect 20% attrition. So you're going to be so good with 80%. And on those days you don't do it, you're like, Groundhog Day, I didn't do it yesterday, I'm going to do it today. Instead of, I didn't do it one day, I suck, I'm never going to get all this done, I can't keep an agreement for my life, you know, all that stuff.
Right.
So, you know, go for 100% and expect 80.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah.
What's your takeaway from this?
My takeaway is that this is reframed as a practice, and I've been listening to a book on tape, and this would be a great time to turn the book on and listen, like dedicate time listening to that book, turn the news off, turn off murder podcasts, just listen to this book and really concentrate and focus. And that becomes this time. And then setting that timer is really good. Otherwise the work just doesn't stop. And so being able to say, this is my time for today. When I listen to the book, I have my coffee and I focus on this room, and really reducing that criticism of myself, because that is what happens. I come in and I just get hypercritical of the work, and then I don't want to do it again. But I think that just comes out of exhaustion. So if I can really pace myself, then the work gets better and the criticism tends to go away.
Yes. I love it.
Okay.
Send us pictures, post pictures for us as you go along.
Oh, well, you're all welcome to stay once we can leave our houses again.
Awesome.
So, all right.
Thank you, Jen. So much, Whitney. Okay, 206. Who's this?
Ruth.
Hi, Ruth.
Hi.
How are you?
I am doing all right.
Good.
All things considered.
You have a riding question.
I actually have a riding question, yes.
Would you kind of outline it for us and let me know what you'd like to – go ahead.
Okay. Do you want me to just go over the question or
or say what you were going to say first and then tell me.
Oh, I was going to say I'm kind of in the same boat with everyone else about feeling guilty. I'm lucky that I have worked from home a couple of days a week for the last several years. Our company is completely set up for it. So now that I've been working from home for over a month now, I'm lucky enough to be on property. So I've been getting lots of chores done. So, but at the same time, I feel guilty that I live on property and have horses here and, you know, get to do yard work and all that good stuff when I don't have to be commuting. So
So now because
my life is not
having
here.
To feel guilty.
Yeah. Yeah. But.
So what do you want to get out of this conversation? What's your question?
I've made a lot of progress in the last couple of years, and I can honestly say that with the lease horse I'm riding now and with the new horse I had last year, that I spend most of my time comfortable and happy in the saddle. I don't have a lot of fear anymore when I'm in a lesson or riding on my own and, you know, going off the property to a clinic or something, which of course isn't happening now, but when it was happening. But that's as long as everything kind of goes the way I expect it to go. But if even on where I ride, where my horse is, if something strange happens, like the neighbor's kid decides to stand up on the hill and jump up and down, or if there's work going on in the barn and there's a guy in a ladder, the horse that I'm riding, he's only 8, but he's really a solid citizen. He's not a particularly spooky horse, but I have come off him once. So when I see that, that's when I kind of panic. I no longer become the leader. I become the passenger, and I'm worried about him spooking. But more than that, I just want to avoid the situation, which yeah. I know is not good for him because it's going to wreck his confidence eventually if I keep taking him away from, like, if there's a kid over there jumping up and down, I won't go to that end of the arena until the kid leaves, instead of just dealing with it, which I know I should do, but I don't know how to make myself do it. That inner critic or the inner panicked person is the one that's at that point leading it.
Got it. So that's feeling kind of like you have really tackled a lot of the fear issues that you had originally when things are going well, and that you kind of, you stay a leader, like you're very proactive about how you're approaching your riding. And then when there's something that is unpredictable or seems like it has the potential to be unpredictable, so my question for you, it sounds like the fear takes over your thoughts because you're planning to avoid it, right? You're saying, okay, I'm not going to go down to that end of the ring, or I'm not going to, you know, go by that hill. Is it also your nervous system, or is it mostly your thoughts that are saying, ooh, I'm going to avoid that?
It's in my nervous system as well. And
so
and
if you want to leave the situation, are you going up to a 5?
I can potentially go up to a 5. I've been in a situation with a trainer where I would say, you know, when there's a guy standing on a ladder doing something, and I'll say, I'm not going to go down there. I'm not going to canter over there. I'll canter over here, and she'll.
I bet your trainer loves that.
Yeah.
Okay, so what would you describe for me when you have solved this and you're over it? What's it going to be like? What do you want?
I would like to think more. I just realize that I can handle it. I can stay in the saddle. I'm not going to come off. My horse is not going to freak out if I don't freak out, and that I just continue my ride. I think it was an Ingrid Klimke thing. She said, you control your ride. Your horse doesn't.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where I want to be. I mean, there's obviously always going to at some point be a situation where your horse completely freaks out. But I don't want to expect the horse to freak out, because I'm freaking out when he doesn't even care.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So I have a couple of ideas for you just to brainstorm with you about.
Okay.
What has happened now, tell me if I'm wrong, but I think what has happened is you have an expectation, and you've gotten, because you said in your Facebook comment that you have been practicing, you know, having a mantra, you've been practicing kind of that inner coach, leader voice. And so you've been really taking charge. And your expectation is that things go well. Like that's your, you know, that's kind of your basic expectation, and that things are predictable. And then when they're not, that's not meeting your expectations. And so then you just sort of dive out of that situation. Like you're no longer in charge. You're no, because it doesn't match your expectations. Does that make sense? Like you lose control.
Yeah, it does.
So one question I have for you is, what if every single ride you expected unpredictable things to happen? And instead of hoping for things to go smoothly and well and having no disruptions, instead you go into every ride looking for some, trying to create some so you can practice. And I call it looking for points of light, like looking for opportunities to practice whatever you need to practice. Because you're now, your habit is to avoid that which seems like it might be scary. And in order to change that, you've got to actually now look for those things that might be scary and search out the opportunity.
Okay.
So So that might be like, okay, let's say you're riding in the ring and, you know, somebody starts doing work on climbing a ladder in, nearby at one end of the ring. Your normal MO would be for your brain to go, ooh, I want to avoid that. You go up to a five. You're like, okay, how can I keep control of this situation? I keep control by leaving. Instead, I would encourage you to think in that moment, aha, there's my opportunity during this ride. Take a deep breath and let me make a plan. Like, stop and make a plan. Don't just force yourself to go down there. But stop and make a plan and say, okay, how can I challenge myself gradually? How can I sort of incrementally challenge myself here and take this opportunity?
Okay.
Does that make so what, let's take that scenario. What might be some incremental challenges you could set up for yourself in that scenario where there's somebody unexpectedly working at one end of the arena?
I could like do the aha and then think, okay, well, we'll start by trotting closer to it, or not even really looking at it and just continuing. I guess what I want to do is just continue my ride, continue working what I was working on, doing the same things, but maybe I do those in stages instead of forcing myself to go down to the guy on the ladder or the dog running across the outdoor arena or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And you sort of take it in smaller steps, but keep telling my horse that it's fine, because I think that's kind of the most important thing, really, is that if I'm panicking, why shouldn't he panic? But if I tell him he's fine, then he should be fine. Like, he should be listening and he should be fine.
Yeah, so the most important thing you just said is the smaller step.
Mm-hmm.
When you first said, oh, I'll just keep trotting and I'll just keep going down there, can you see how that's lumping? Remember we talked about lumping last time?
Mm-hmm.
That's lumping. That's expecting way too much of yourself and him when you're at a five to just keep trotting down there.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, some examples might be, okay, you do some 10-meter circles in the walk and you do them, you know, and whenever you're riding, if you're turning, you have more control.
Mm-hmm.
When you're turning, you can control the hips of the horse. And it's not just about pulling on the rein to get control. It's controlling the horse by gaining control over their hips. So if you decide, and you will feel safer if you're on a circle. Does that make sense? You feel safer to
A
series of 10-meter circles through the short end, the scary end, than you would just trotting around. So you might set yourself up, you know, do some 10-meter circles kind of at the PS line and then do some 10-meter circles a little further down and then do some 10-meter circles at the walk all the way down in the scary area. And maybe you can even halt in the middle of one of your 10-meter circles and, like, just tell your horse everything's cool, tell yourself everything's cool, and then progress as far along as you want to or can that day. But the key is your main goal is – eventually, like in a couple of months, be able to just keep on working exactly as if nothing had happened.
Right.
But right now, you are going to look at every opportunity to incrementally challenge yourself in smaller steps.
Okay.
Does that make sense? If you just focus on your big goal and you keep trying for that big goal, you're going to keep stay blocked.
Mm-hmm.
Because the expectation is too big and you'll stay at a five. And then your horse will start to get nervous.
Mm-hmm.
No matter how chill, you know, how cool he is.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you could apply that to different scenarios? Like if you're on the trail and something unexpected happens?
Yeah, I think so. I think on a trail, it's a little, like on a trail ride or something, it's a little different because, I mean, you have to go in one direction, you have to go forward. It'd be easier in the arena. But I think I can still break it down in small enough increments that I could still get down the trail as opposed to saying, oh, I guess we'll turn around and go back now.
Yeah. So, and even if it means you get off and you walk by or you do some 10-meter circles or you halt and you just let yourself go down from a five to a three. But it's this kind of wanting to force yourself through it that gets you into trouble.
Yeah.
Or letting yourself completely avoid it.
So it's the middle, that you're taking the middle way by doing the small step.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Does this trigger any other ideas for you, Ruth, in terms of some things that you might, some strategies that you might use?
Well, I think this is really the way I've always in the past have dealt with any kind of my fear issues usually come with a new horse. Once I get to know the horse, and I've been told by a trainer that some of the horses I really trusted I shouldn't have, but that's the way I am. It's like once I know how the horse will react to certain things, then I'm much more likely to be comfortable with that reaction. But this is, I've only been riding this horse since January. So there's a little different, but I think breaking things down into smaller pieces is really good because I do tend to lump and do things to myself like, well, if you can't do this, then you can't show. So if you can't even ride around the arena without freaking out, how do you think you're going to go to a show? So not putting that much pressure on myself and just keeping those things small the same way I would do it if I was training a horse with something. I wouldn't expect them to all of a sudden just be perfect at something. I would expect to be able to break it down and you know, let them learn along the way. And that's kind of what I have to do with this.
For yourself. Yeah.
For myself.
All right.
Yeah.
I've
always been more of a push through it type. So, which is probably why I've never been able to let go of it.
Yeah. And in this case, slower is faster. Just tell yourself slower is faster.
Mm-hmm.
The more you break it down, the faster you will get to where, you know, your goal.
And then I think.
All right. Thank you so much.
Yes. Thank you.
Yes. All right. Have a good night.
You too. Thanks.
All
right.
Bye. Bye-bye. We've got 805. Who's this?
Hi, Jan. It's Anita.
Hi, Anita. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank
Good.
You.
Good.
Yeah, everything
so
is
So you wanted some help putting your big why into words.
Yeah, I just, you know, just kind of thinking about, well, what is my big why? It's, trying to put it into words.
Yes.
I'm grappling with that a little bit.
And just to kind of refresh everybody on a little bit on your story, you last year had some real sort of quandary about whether to keep eventing and do dressage or whether to just focus on dressage. And you've had a real pull and a real passion to keep eventing, but then also some real reservations about it. And you've progressed in your dressage a lot, like from, you know, kind of first, second level to through now to fourth level, right, in the last couple of years?
Yes.
Is that right? And have I understood correctly that you've sort of really now committed to the dressage and decided not to keep competing, at least with eventing?
I think that's where I am. I feel pretty strongly that yes, the commitment to the dressage is there, but I still definitely want to jump just for the fun of it, just because it's such good cross training for both of us. But do I feel that, you know, do I really need to compete at it? And it's like, I really don't. So yeah, I think I am committed to like, let's just pursue the dressage but still keep jumping very much in play. Cause I'm still like taking a jumping lesson every week or every other week. I just want to keep it, you know, keep it going.
So if you, so what are your current ideas about your big why?
It's like, so why, you know, it's like, why do any of us do this crazy sport? I mean, it's so fulfilling, and it's so challenging, and, I guess those would be the two big things. Something that's, there's such a sense of accomplishment when you're doing it, and it's, and at the same time, it's really fun, and it's this partnership, and all of this, and I guess trying to kind of how do you put that into words?
If you couldn't ride for let me just fill everybody in case some people haven't started listening to the audios for module 4 yet. So your big why is really your kind of core purpose for
doing what you do. And there have been studies done by sports psychologists, really good ones, that really show that this is one of the things that distinguishes elite athletes and musicians from sort of, you know, backyard musicians and athletes, is this having a big why. And it's also something that helps that most people who are really connected with their big why and can articulate it and understand it, they get more fulfillment and enjoyment from their sport. So that's kind of the background of this, of why this, why we're having this conversation. So Anita, if you couldn't, if somebody came to you, you know, tomorrow and said, I'm taking your horse away, you are not, you can no longer ride, what would you miss the most about riding?
So I actually wrote that down because, you know, the question is there, and I wrote down a few things. I wrote down what I would miss the most would be euphoria, sense of accomplishment, love, harmony, partnership, relationship.
So, you know, those are very different from challenging. I mean, you said accomplishment, but it sounds like the euphoria, the love, the partnership, and then the challenge and the accomplishment. Like, those are two pieces of it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So how might you say that in a sentence? I ride. Remember your mantra, just for the joy of it?
Yes.
You can state it really similar to that.
Okay.
I ride.
Yeah, I ride because it makes me really happy. I guess my big why doesn't have to be any bigger than that, does it?
Yeah, I ride because this makes me happy. And, you know, the way that you utilize your big why is if you're, let's say you're going around the outside of the ring and you're getting distracted by thinking about what the judge might be thinking, or kind of thinking about all the little details of the test, and it's making you tense, and you kind of get in the fear cycle. And your ability to kind of come back to your big why in that moment, right before you go down the center line, can help you get very grounded and breathe again. I ride because this makes me happy. This is why I'm doing it. Instead of, oh my God, what's the judge thinking? And oh, am I going to get my, you know, flying change? And what if my half pass isn't quite forward enough? Or whatever, you know, whatever your brain is doing.
Yeah.
So I ride because it makes me happy. I mean, that is a great big why.
Yeah, I think I was making it more complicated.
As yeah. I mean, all those other words are important, but this is really the core, the crux of it, is I ride because.
Okay, well, that is exactly what I was trying to do. Okay, how do I make this into like a simple sentence, you know, that I could explain if somebody asked me, you know, I could just say it, and there you have it.
Yeah,
that's it.
And what can anybody say to that, right?
Yeah, exactly. I was trying to go way somewhere else that I didn't need to go. So yeah, that's just that's pretty simple.
Excellent, I love it. So I am assuming that's your takeaway. Is that you ride?
That's my takeaway. It's a good one.
All right. Thanks a lot, Anita. Have a good night.
All right. Thanks, Jen.
Okay. Let's see. 808. Who's this?
It's Megan.
Hi, Megan from Hawaii.
Hello.
So your question is a little similar to Whitney's, right?
It is. It's kind of a two-part question. I loved in the audio that you put out for it's not chapter four, but month four, where you said naming, like finding the emotion behind why we're procrastinating or our musketeers or whatever, because I never actually thought about it that way. And when I thought about what is driving my procrastination, the word, like, it's hard kept coming to mind.
Yeah.
And so when I sit down, I'm you know, my, when I'm with my horse, I am like super focused and in the moment, and I can push through whatever challenges we're doing together, whether it's in the saddle or on the ground, and I'm super pumped and energized. And then I get home to write about what we just did in our lesson. And then all of a sudden it's like, but I don't know where to start. And then once I start, what voice do I use? And then, okay, if I just keep writing, then it takes longer than I have to complete the project. So like, it feels like I didn't accomplish anything. I just am like spinning my wheels. Which then kind of leads into the second point of, so I have my why and I have my goals and my benchmarks, but when I dive into starting to work on the steps to achieve those big goals, there's always things that I didn't anticipate coming. Like, oh, I'm going to take a video. Wait, I don't actually know how to do that on my camera. So now I have to go learn how to take the video or how to edit the video before I can actually reach that goal. So it's like the goal keeps getting longer and longer and bigger and bigger. So when I sit down to actually work on something, I'm like, and this is hard. And I don't know how to like mentally push through that block.
So perfectionism kind of starts. It starts with, you know, kind of feeling like you want to accomplish this hunk of work. And I'll kind of fill people in. So one of, so Megan's goal, one big goal is to have a blog, right? And ultimately use video to educate people and have an online program based on blogging and videoing and blogging, right?
Yep.
So you're in this, and hearing you talk, it just brings all back when I first was starting my coaching business. The hours, the torturous hours I spent trying to figure out little tiny technical details and, you know, making no progress and just hours and hours and hours that felt so pointless and wasted at the time. And now I know that's part of the process. So I have the, because I've experienced it now, I can kind of persevere through those things in a different way. So hearing you talk about it reminds me of, you know, that first, it's the steep learning curve in the beginning, anytime you start a new big project. So I'm hearing your question, your two questions. Well, they're kind of both the same, because this feeling of not progressing on your goal and kind of judging yourself for whether it's good or not, or whether you're doing the right thing or the not right thing, or in these big things you have to learn and then it's hard, that's causing you to procrastinate and put it off. Is that right? So then you're not getting it done. So what would you like to leave this conversation with?
Is there a way to preempt that feeling that I get when I'm like, I sit down to write or I have some video and I'm like, how do you get started? Because I feel like I sit down and I've just had this awesome time at the barn or with my horse and I'm feeling great. And I have this like phrases that go through my mind when I'm at the barn, but then I sit down to do it. And all of a sudden I'm like, I think I'm hungry. I think I need to go do the laundry. I think I need to do all these things, because suddenly all the inspiration I had has now left me, now that it's just myself and my computer and my thoughts.
Okay. So your thought is that it's hard, right? It's that it's hard.
Yep.
So what could you do to make it easy? And the thought is like, when you sit down and think, okay, I need to sit down and come up with some sort of a product. I need to, you know, be able to write. I need to write like 6 paragraphs about that ride. Instead, how could you make it easy? What could you do after the ride that would be easy?
Like right after the ride, I mean, I've tried talking, like recording my thoughts on the ride so that I can review them later, but that hasn't worked either. So like, I feel like I need some sort of like ritual or something to get me like in the groove.
Okay. So I'll just brainstorm with you now. So what if instead of expecting yourself to sit down and write, after every ride, you just write down 5 main, like one main point and 5 takeaways, or one main, like you just did something real simple Like you write five something.
Okay.
What's the main idea from today? And then that's all you did. And then at the end of a week, you might be able to say, okay, which one of those really inspires me? Which one of those ideas really inspires
me? Kind of like a bullet point list opposed to writing paragraphs.
And what you might find is that if you plan on sitting down and writing five bullet points, you might actually, but don't tell yourself.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like you might end up writing more if your expectation is that you're only going to write those 5 points.
I like that.
But if your expectation is that you're going to write five paragraphs, that is really overwhelming, especially when perfectionism is telling you that those paragraphs have to be publishable.
I like that.
Sense?
Mm-hmm.
So again, it's this alignment of your expectations. Keep your expectations small so that your micro steps seem bigger, you know, in relationships.
I keep having to come back to that. Smaller expectations.
And I think the expectation that it's going to take longer, like my son this last week, he gets these big projects that he thinks he's going to do, right, during quarantine. And the last one, he's building him his own jungle gym. Like he literally peeled the, you know, stained the wood, peeled the wood, is going to build dip bars and a pull-up bar for himself, all with woods and, you know, all from hand. Well, he came up on roadblock after roadblock after roadblock, and he got so discouraged. And I would watch him. He would just leave the project for a couple of days. And I'd be like, oh, crap, is he just going to leave all that stuff lying around? But he kept then going back to it, right? He would leave it, and he wanted to give up. He was so discouraged. Then he would go back to it, and he would solve a little problem and get a little further, and then he'd get really frustrated again, and he would leave it. And I recognized when he was doing that, like, he really needed to quit, needed to give himself time away. So when you're learning how to do the videos or you're learning how to use, you know, do something online you need to do for this project, you might want to, you know, dive into it a little bit and then let yourself, instead of judging yourself, like, oh, this is so hard, I'm never going to learn it, just do it in little bite-sized pieces. And his jungle gym is amazing now, by the way. I mean, it looks so cool. It's like a piece of art now. You know, and that is what we don't realize when we're in the middle of a big project and we're having all these roadblocks and it seems like we're making so little progress. It's that, you know, when it finally does, when you finish that first blog post and the first blog, it's going to be amazing. But it's going to be in all these small little increments, these small little efforts.
Do you find having some sort of a mantra or phrase that to repeat the positive rather than the negative? Does that make sense? So I default to the negative, right? The perfectionism. Oh, this is hard. Oh, I don't think it'll look the way I want it to. Like, is there a way to reverse that? So instead of thinking those thoughts, it's more like, I'm not even sure what it would be, but does that make sense?
Yeah. And I'm a little biased away from just like Pollyanna positive because I just don't think it's real, but the things that came to my mind when you were talking are one foot in front of the other.
Okay.
One foot in front of the other. I can do this. And recognizing all entrepreneurs go through this. All, anybody who's writing a novel, anybody who's you know, making a piece of art, anybody who's writing a blog, like, we all, it is, every time I do these audio tapes and write the curriculum for this program every month, it's like the same thing. Like, it has to be one foot in front of the other. I need to just do a little piece of it. Just a little piece. I'm going to learn this one little thing. And if it gets so frustrating, leave it and just know it's okay. You'll come back to it later. Don't let yourself think, oh, I can't do it. It's too hard. Instead, it's like, okay, let me leave this for right now. Focus on something else and I'll do it. So your thoughts are more constructive rather than destructive. So if and I don't know if that's helpful to you to think of that instead of thinking positive, negative, think constructive versus destructive.
No, that's great. And I really like the 5 points and one main takeaway. That's what I'll do.
Because then those are going to inspire you, right? At some point, those thoughts will inspire you. And I would love to hear if any, because I know we have actually quite a few people in the Performance Project who write blogs, who have blogs, who write, who are actual writers. So if any of you guys have suggestions for Megan, I'd love to hear those too, maybe on the comments below the call recording. That would be great. Because, and this is the other thing, don't suffer in silence. Get ideas from, you know, other people that have done similar things or that are, you know, doing similar projects whenever you can.
Okay. Sounds good. And to that, I just wanted to comment. I heard a lot of people talking about groundwork, and having done groundwork first with my horse before riding, I have to tell all of you, like, it does pay off. So I think that's awesome. Just as a side note.
So Megan, think of this project now. Remember, you've told me the story of you and your horse where nothing was working. You just felt completely at a loss. And when you went back and took everything step by step with the groundwork, you ended up with this amazing first level horse, right? So think of your blog right now as the same thing. All these little frustrating things that you think are so hard, they are all the little foundation pieces that you learn to put together for your horse. And it's exactly the same process.
Awesome.
Does
thank
that make
you.
Sense?
No, it makes perfect sense.
Cool.
And that, I'm energized. Thank you.
Yay. Good. All right. Thank you so much. Have a great evening. Okay. The final question that Lorraine had, how are we doing on time? Okay. We're good. We're just a little bit past seven. So Lorraine had this question of how do you, when you have a goal and you or a big why, she said her big why is to be the best she can be. How do you balance striving all the time with, I think my word was peace, but with doing what you need to do? And it's such a great question because, you know, people think, like, even about the Performance Project, that it's all about, you know, setting goals and striving and working so hard and doing all the things. And it's really not. It's really about this balance between striving and peace. And what I would say, Lorraine, and I was thinking about this when I was talking with you earlier, what you were talking about just, you know, learning to feel what you feel and accept it and move on, that is the same idea when you're striving. And I think, Christine, you brought this up a couple of calls ago when you were feeling like you should be striving and you should be accomplishing all these goals and you should be really clear about your goals. And instead, you realize you just needed to take a break. And I think striving always needs to be balanced with compassion and with an awareness of when you just need to take a break. And I had a day like that yesterday. I've been working really hard, extra hard. I took on a bunch of pro bono work on top of all my regular work when this pandemic started. And yesterday I had like three people cancel in the middle of the day. And a lot of times I would be like, okay, I've got to get, you know, three more recordings written or whatever, get two horses lunch, whatever. And yesterday I just took a nap. And I'm still working on that. It's still a challenge for me to do that. But it is so valuable to be able to kind of always allow yourself to be where you need to be and not pushing yourself to strive, work all the time. And really create a balance. And sometimes it's really a challenge. So it is helpful to kind of put up parameters for yourself also, as well as sort of feeling the feels, whatever those are, also put up some parameters for yourself around what that striving looks like. And one of the most important things I learned from, the guy that wrote, How to be excellent at everything. Tony Schwartz, that's his name. He has something called the Energy Project, if any of you ever want to look it up. Really valuable. And what he taught me was that as human beings, we are not designed to be marathon runners. We are designed to be sprinters, to sprint and rest. So that's in how I have balanced my own sort of inclination to be striving all the time with what really needs to be a healthier lifestyle is learning how to sprint and rest instead of expect. So, I don't know if that answers your question, Lauren, completely, but that's my ideas on that. All right, you guys, thank you so much for being here for yet another Performance Project call. I want to tell you, I still have plans to do some Facebook Live events for just us and the Performance Project coming up in the next month. Once I get through my resilience workshops this Friday and Monday, we'll be kind of working on those and you know, let you know what that's going to look like. And just a reminder that if any of you have not signed up already and you want to sign up for one of those and join those Zoom workshops, those are free to you, and they are in. I've sent emails out, and the link is also in the Facebook group. So feel free to join me for those, and continue to have a really balanced, positive experience moving forward, no matter what lifestyle shifts and changes you're experiencing. All right, thanks a lot, and you'll get the recording tomorrow. Good night.